You're listening to the World of Higher Education podcast, Season 2, Episode 21.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alex Usher, and this is the World of Higher Education podcast. Back in 1999, something kind of miraculous occurred in Indiana. A local student loan guarantee agency, known as the USA Group, was bought out by what was then known as the Student Loan Marketing Association, or Sallie Mae, now known as Navient. But because USA Group was a nonprofit organization, the law said that the proceeds of the sale needed to be put towards some charitable endeavor. And thus, a few months later, was born the Lumina Foundation, with its headquarters in Indianapolis, endowed at its start with over $1 billion U.S. in assets, all to be used for the purpose of expanding access and success in post-secondary education. Now, there are very few foundations in the world with Lumina's combination of firepower and focus. Sure, other foundations like Ford, Kellogg, Sloan, and others might have bigger endowments, but all of them are involved in a lot more than just higher education. Lumina was different. Lumina had heft. But then it also started proclaiming hefty goals, like trying to increase U.S. attainment rates by over 20 percentage points in 15 years, like trying to get states to take definitions of quality in higher education seriously. Even if Lumina was the giant in the room, philanthropically speaking, it still only had about $50 million a year to spend. How could it actually influence an industry worth hundreds of billion dollars a year? With me to discuss that today is Courtney Brown. She's the Vice President of Impact and Planning at Lumina Foundation, and the person most responsible for making sure the foundation hits its goals and develops new and even more meaningful ones. Now, full disclosure, I was on Lumina's International Advisory Board for a number of years, so take my enthusiasm with whatever grain of salt you want. In this conversation, we'll talk about how Lumina went about its goal-setting process, what tactics it's used to build a wide network of alliances across the U.S., how close it's come to succeeding in its goals, and what the organization's next set of goals might be. I hope you find Courtney's answers to these questions to be as thought-provoking and heartening as I did. But enough from me, let's listen to Courtney. So Courtney, when the Lumina Foundation started life, I think 1999 or 2000, it was mostly about access to education, broadly defined. How did its agenda grow over time to encompass something more than just simply getting people through the door?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, Lumina was created in 2000. And it was actually when two organizations merged and a profit came out. So they had to create a private foundation. The two that merged were about higher education. So Lumina knew when they were created that they wanted to focus on higher education. And around 2000, as you may remember, at least in the U.S., it was a lot about access. How do we get more people in the door? How do we think about low-income families, first people in their families to go to college, people of color? And there's a lot of talk around access. And so for the beginning, probably the first 8 years of Lumina's existence, it really focused a lot on access, big ideas, trying to move large things and get people more aware of college and figure out how to get them in the door of college.
And so how did that change over time? So you start in 2000, that's the way it is. By 2009, you've adopted an extremely ambitious goal to make sure that 60% of American adults had some kind of high quality credential by 2025. That's a really specific goal. And it's much broader than just access. So what was it that inspired or maybe possessed the organization to take on that kind of broad yet very specific goal?
Yeah, so around 2008, Lumina was looking for new leadership and trying to think about what's the next direction. And so we brought in a new CEO, Jamie Marisonis, and part of the board and Jamie's negotiation, really thinking about where could Lumina go. And what they did was they looked at where we were as a nation and understood that access, while important, isn't sufficient. And so we had to think about how do we get more people, not just into the door of college, but through the door. And the purpose of getting them through the door to a credential is to help our labor market. And we did a lot of looking at research, some work that Tony Carnabelli did at Georgetown Center on Education and the Workforce. And they were showing that by 2020, that we would need at least 60%, 62%, I can't remember the exact numbers, of people with credentials. And we also, so while we were looking at what Tony's work was showing, that we were going to need a much better educated population, we also looked around the world. And I think many people in the United States think, oh, the U.S. is the best higher ed system in the world. We do it so well. But the reality, when we started comparing the U.S. to other countries, where we were about 12th in the globe with regards to higher education attainment. Now, we recognized not only if we wanted to fill the labor market needs in the U.S., but if we wanted to be globally competitive, we needed to up our game. We needed to increase attainment. And so around the end of 2008 and into 2009, Lumina set a goal for the nation. So this is not Lumina's goal. This is the U.S. national goal that by 2025, we wanted to increase the people living in the United States that had high quality credentials or degrees to 60% by 2025. So an incredibly ambitious goal that was set in 2000.
I'm not sure I've ever thought about this before, but is this the first time that people had made a goal about participation that was explicitly rooted in labor market demands? I always think of the U.S. access debate as being driven by social justice or equality demands, but you've just said that you focused it specifically on, for instance, Tony Carnevale's work. Did that make a difference to the way you approach this?
In some ways, yes. Access is absolutely important. And Lumina was always, at its very core, equity-minded. And we define equity about racial equity. So in the U.S., that is the most important thing that we believe we need to focus on. To reach the 60%, we have to focus on the people that are being left behind. And the people that are being left behind are the students of color. They are the low-income people. They are the people that are in rural communities. And so we had to continue to focus on those populations in order to reach the 60% goal, in order to reach the labor market needs we need, in order to reach the diversity of opinion, perspectives, and knowledge and skills. All those things are very important at its core. But at the end of the day, we have to think about what does the nation need? And we need talent. We need diverse talent. And to do that, we believe that the key is through higher education attainment.
Interesting. Okay. In 2009, what was the completion rate? You had a goal of 60%. What were you working from?
Yeah, great question. So just a caveat. So when we set the goal, it said 60% degrees and other high quality credentials by 2025. So we set the goal. And in 2009, the only thing we could measure were degrees. We put in other high quality credentials because we recognize there are other credentials out there that are extremely important to the labor market, to people that still offer good lives and good jobs to individuals, but we had no way to count them. So in 2009, when we first started measuring where we were with attainment and set that threshold, we could only count degrees, and we were at 38%. So, you know, it didn't include those certificates and certifications that we've started counting along the way, but we sat at 38%, which is a far cry from the 60% we are aiming for in 2025.
Yeah, that's huge. And of course, one of the things that was evident even at the time was that this goal had a lot of moving pieces. This was a much tougher goal than the one Lumina originally had, because you've got pieces about financial aid, you've got pieces around institutional practices with respect to attainment and degree granting and that kind of stuff. And then some of it was about defining what a quality credential is. So let me take these in order. What was it that Lumina thought at the outset it could do to move a system of student aid that was worth hundreds of billions of dollars to move the needle on access? What was the theory of change, and what did you do to undertake to make it so?
Well, I would say the first thing that we really had to focus on was about getting people to buy in. Remember, I said the nation was focused on access. And there was some talk about completion, not really about attainment. And so getting mindsets to change was one of the most important things we had to do. And really in that first 4 years of setting this goal, our first strategic plan was just about that, changing hearts and minds. And what's interesting is when we set the goal for the nation, so we set a national goal, we recognized that in order to accomplish this, we needed states to act. We needed communities to act. It wasn't just about national changes. And when we set the goal in 2008, only one state had an attainment goal that was quantitative, that spoke about equity gaps, whatever equity gaps that existed in that state that was set in statute. And so only one state had a goal, and that was Hawaii, actually. Over the course of time, we started working with states to talk about why making this a priority is so important. And over the course of time, we have 49 states who set goals between 2008 and today. 48 additional ones, because we already had Hawaii.
Who's the holdout?
The holdout is New York. Yeah. And what's interesting is just because they don't have a statewide goal does not mean they're not focused on this work. New York systems do incredible work on attainment and access and completion and all of that. They just haven't come up yet with a statewide goal.
So what about institutions and their practices? I remember you doing a lot of work around things like stranded credits and how do we get more degrees to all these students learners who have partial degrees. How did you think about instigating change among, in a sector that's got 4,000 institutions or so? How do you work with that group?
Yeah. Like I said, the first beginning was we worked with states and trying to think about that because some state policies have to change in order to address some of these issues. What's their funding formulas? A lot of states had funding formulas that funded institutions based on the number of people they don't let in rather than how many they complete on the other end. So thinking about some of those things is really important as it impacts the institution. But you're right, like that the students attend institutions, they don't attend states. And so institutions have to change in order to better serve students. And so a lot of the work we've done since 2009 and until today is really thinking about how institutions can be more student-centered, really focusing on the student and getting them through to the finish line. We thought a lot about what does a degree mean? We thought a lot about trying to think of somebody's credit when it's due. Credit when it's due was some work we did to think about some students that leave a two-year institution and they transfer to a four-year institution before they get the two-year degree. And they really, by the time they're at the four-year institution, we see a lot of people stop out. And so they end up with nothing. But the reality is they should have received that associate's degree. You're getting credit when it's due. And one of the most important things I would say we did and we continue to do is focus on what we say today's students are. And today's students are important because a lot of our policymakers and institution leaders still think of college students as 18-year-olds that come onto a college campus, they're going to be there for 4 years, they're going to live in a brick building, and then they're going to graduate and have a job for life. And that could not be further from the truth in the U.S. We know that in the U.S. that over a third of college students are over 25. Almost half of them are first-generation college goers. Many of them are independent. They have no parents paying for it. They're financially responsible. And we have about a third that have actually their own children, their own dependents that they need to focus on. And so thinking about how institutions can be more student-centered and really focusing on the students they're serving today, not in the 70s, was one of the really important things we had to do. And once they recognize that, then they can be more student-centered with regards to their services they're providing and other things to help those students get through.
And finally, there was your work on quality credentials, which I think was maybe the most original, certainly unorthodox thing that Lumina did in the past 15 years. Tell us about the degree qualifications profile you developed and how you worked to promote this and other measures of quality across the 50 states.
Yeah, quality has really always been important to Lumina. We really think about the two important pillars that we have are equity and quality. We're not just counting pieces of paper for the 60%. We want people to have quality credentials. They actually mean something on the other end. And so, again, we looked internationally to say, what's going on? How are other people thinking about this? And many countries do something called tuning, which is to look at what within one area, let's say history, what does a history degree mean? A history BA should mean the same thing at this institution as it is at another institution. And so really thinking about what you need to know and be able to do with a history BA. And that then led us to the degree qualifications profile, which is like looking at the degree overall rather than a specific content area. And the degree qualifications profile said, these are the things you need to know and be able to do with a BA. These are the things you need to know and be able to do with an associate's. And you're able to change the dials depending on the type of institution you are. So you're going to lean more into civic education or more into global learning or different things like that, depending on who you were. But it was really the first time the U.S. had some sort of qualifications framework. Many other countries have them and they work really well. The U.S. doesn't have one. The degree qualifications profile really forced institutions to rethink their degrees and make sure that students were getting all of these things that really make a good degree, a quality degree that leads to good jobs and good lives.
And so how much take up was there? How many states took it up or how many institutions took it up?
That's a great question. And I And I don't know as far as like state. So we didn't really have a state that said, we're going to take over the degree qualifications profile. We had hundreds of institutions that tried it. But what really happened is a department with an institution would take it on. But to have a whole institution taken on, not so much. Now, we haven't really focused a lot of resources in recent years on the degree qualifications profile specifically. However, as I'm traveling around, as my colleagues are traveling around, and as we hear from institutions, many people are still doing it. They still find great value in it. And I think as we think more about some of the problems we're facing nowadays with people questioning quality, that this is going to become even more important. And I think we're going to see more of an uptake in things people thinking about a degree qualifications profile or really thinking about quality and what that means.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by Higher Education Strategy Associates, a sector-specific consultancy based in Toronto, Canada. Generative artificial intelligence has taken the higher education sector by storm since the release of ChatGPT at the end of 2022. Since then, many post-secondary institutions have been working to develop their response to this new technology. At HESA, we've developed a database of institutional policies, statements, and guidelines that are being developed across the country and all around the world. Need an extra hand with developing your own institutional response to Gen AI? We can help. Reach out to our team to discuss ways in which we could support your efforts.
And we're back. Courtney, it seems to me that an awful lot of what Lumina is doing, to a much greater extent than most of the big philanthropies, was being engaged in coalition building, right? Because you have to, the kind of coalition you need for change in an area like this, you've got to change hearts and minds. That was your first 4 years, as you said. And then you've got so many players in the game, you can't do this alone. You had staff in DC to focus on federal policy. You had staff that dealt with state governments. You had, I'm just trying to think in terms of influencing public policy or measuring public policy, did those regular Gallup polls. Did you have a strategy or a set of tactics, a playbook for coalition building? And how successful do you think you were in terms of building a wide coalition for greater credential completion?
I would say we have been both successful and unsuccessful in some coalition building. I think you're absolutely right. Coalition building is essential. So Lumina set this goal for the nation. This is not just Lumina's work. We certainly can't do it alone. We know institutions can't do it alone because they need policy to change. We also know communities need to be at the heart of this. Institutions live within communities. We need business leaders as part of this role. So we have done coalition building in a number of different ways. Sometimes it's coalition building within a state with their state policymakers and institutional leaders, system leaders, and community. Sometimes it is across states or institutions and thinking about how we come together and learn from each other. We've done a couple things that were specifically branded. One of them was talent hubs. Those talent hubs really focused on, let's bring some community leaders to the table. Let's bring the education leaders to the table, the business people to the table, industry, and the policymakers to say, okay, what do we need to do in Tulsa to think about how we can increase attainment here? And we recognize all those voices have to be at the table because if somebody is left behind, you're not going to be as successful. And so that building those local coalitions was extremely powerful in driving change. I think one of the things where it's hard to say was it successful or unsuccessful. And I think sometimes we're hard on ourselves and we said, we didn't see the numbers change in 3 years. So sometimes we go, oh my gosh, I guess it wasn't successful. The reality is these things are slow moving. We're not going to see large increases in 3 years in completion. It takes a bit of time to get people in the door and then to completion. But many of these efforts are still going. Many of the relationships and the coalitions that were built continue to thrive today.
But you're one small, I don't think you're that big, group in Indianapolis. How do you hold those conversations across how many Tulsas are there? It's got to be 100 Tulsas in the United States. Did you end up focusing maybe on a dozen or two dozen that were promising and had some momentum of their own? Or did you really try and go with a full 50-state strategy?
Although we focus on the whole nation and we try not to leave anybody behind, when we focus on the community work, that had evolved. So we continue to learn over the course of our journey here. we could take the lessons learned from those couple dozen to spread it to other communities around the nation. And I think that's sharing the lessons learned, being really transparent about what we're learning and where the data are, I think has been really important. One of the things, Alex, that you said that I think is interesting is you said, you're right, we're a pretty small organization. We're about 60 people. We're nationwide. Our home base is in Indianapolis, Indiana. But one of the things we have done when we set the goal is we created something called Stronger Nation. It's an online tool. It's accessible. Anybody who's listening, just Google Stronger Nation, the Limited Foundation. And you'll see this tool that is our way of staying accountable to the goal and keeping the nation accountable to the goal. And it shows the data. We don't hide from it. And we outline it for every state, every county, metro area. So you can see where we are and how much further we need to go. It disaggregates by race, ethnicity, and age. It's actually a pretty cool tool. So go. I encourage everybody to go play on it. But I think in doing that, we set the stage and said, we're a trusted partner. We're here to provide the information. And we're going to be accountable to ourselves. And we want you all to be accountable also. And I think that kind of set a level playing field of we can be trusted with this information.
So it's now 2024. You're 1 year away from your destination. What's the score? How far has America come in the last 15 years? And how much of that do you think you can claim credit for? I understand it was a national goal. You must be able to claim some success for a little bit in the nudging.
Remember I said in 2009, we were at about 38%. So yep. The nation today sits at just over 54% attainment rate. So that's about 16 percentage points increase since we set the goal. Now, also remember when I said in 2008, we couldn't count short-term credentials. Over the course of time, we have found a way to measure quality certificates and certifications. We don't count all of them. So that accounts for about 8%, but we still have seen over an 8 percentage point increase in degree attainment, which is really impressive. The other thing that's really impressive that I'm excited about is when we set the goal in 2008, the younger population, the 25 to 34-year-olds, actually had a lower attainment rate than the full population, the 25 to 64. So they actually, their attainment rate was lower, which is really bad news for the nation, right? You're thinking, oh, we're at lower attainment rate. Our future doesn't look that great. So since then, the younger population, those 25 to 34, have not only matched the working age population, they far exceeded it. So the 25 to 34-year-olds today sit at 56%. That's pretty impressive, just over 56%. So we're excited. That is great news for the United States and our future. When you ask, can we take credit for it? Absolutely no, right? This is an effort that everyone has contributed to. States, institutions, everyone. We don't confer degrees. I think what we can say is we changed the conversation. We provided the data. We got people to focus on the things that matter, that is closing equity gaps and increasing attainment. And so, you know, we're excited about that. We're excited about all the work that everyone has done and come together on this. But we also recognize we're far from done. In a year, we're not done with this. There's much more work that needs to be done here.
So I'll come to the next steps in 1 minute here, but I do want you to look back just one more time. Over the last 15 years, what do you think you could have done differently? I mean, you know, you're an evaluator. What were the least productive things you did as an organization? What do you wish you could change looking back?
I think some of the things that we learned is just because we build it doesn't mean they're going to come. If there isn't a need from the field, it just falls flat. So there are things that we thought, oh, of course the nation needs it. I think the degree qualifications profile is actually a really good example. It takes longer to get buy-in on those sort of things. You got to get faculty buy-in and other things. And just because we built it didn't mean that overnight everyone was going to say, oh, you're solving a problem we've had. Over time, I think they've recognized that this does have some legs to it and it does solve some problems. And so I think that's important. But I think that's one of the most important things, that to really drive this immense type of social change, you have to meet people where they are. Can't talk down to them. You have to understand what they need and create it together.
Okay, so now let's look forward. 2025, I take it you're adopting a new goal in the next year or so. I know you can't, if you know it, you probably can't tell us. But what's the direction? Is it still going to be a percentage of the population, or are we going to change this into, is it going to be quantity oriented or quality oriented?
All great questions. And I don't have a great answer for you right now. It's definitely something that we are working on and we think is really important. And some of the work that we're doing right now is a lot of that look back. What worked? What didn't work? One of the things that was really impactful was the goal, setting the goal. It was easy to understand. It's a quantitative time-limited goal and nobody else had one when we set this. Easy to understand what we were doing and where we want to go. And to replicate that is hard. And the other thing is that everybody else has set goals. Every day I read about a new organization that's setting a goal, which is fabulous for our nation, for students all over the place, because it's really focusing on helping them be more successful. I know that we will still focus on attainment. Attainment is still important. We sit at 54% today. We know that in the future, we're going to need way more than 60% of the population to have a quality credential. Tony Carnevale's recent work said by 2031, 70% will need to have a quality credential. As we think even further from that, I can only assume that it's going to go higher. And so we know we need to focus on attainment. The other thing that I think concerns us a lot and what we think about is what does the nation need? What does the United States need? And if you hear the chatter, not just in the U.S., but I would say globally, people are questioning the quality of the credentials. I think they've lost confidence. So when we measure and we look at a lot of, you mentioned the Gallup data, we see that people understand the value of credential. They know they need one to get a job. They understand that value. And we see that even higher amongst people of color, low-income people, they know that this will change their future. However, they're losing confidence that our system can deliver what they need. They're losing confidence because, at least in the U.S. and other places around the world, the cost is far exceeding what they think they're going to get on the other end. So they're questioning the ROI of it. They're questioning that it's going to really give them the skills for what they're going to need in tomorrow's workforce. And so I think that they understand how important it is to have a credential, but they want to make sure that credential actually provides a good job and a good life for them moving forward. And they're not crippled by debt. So I think that's something like we keep in our mind. We're focused on what does the nation need? It's not about what Lumina needs, not about our egos. It's really about what the nation needs. And so we're really trying to unpack that and understand what does the nation need and where does Lumina provide some value in doing that work?
Yeah, that's fascinating. We'll look forward to seeing that new goal when it comes out next year, Courtney. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Alex.
And it just remains for me to thank our excellent producers, Tiffany McLennan and Sam Pufik, and you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you have any questions or suggestions about this or any future episode, please get in touch with us at podcast@higheredstrategy.com. Join us next week when our guest will be Wonky's David Kernahan, who's joining us to talk about England's new lifelong learning entitlement scheme and how it fits into the long-term evolution of the UK's student support system. Bye for now.
The World of Higher Education podcast is a Higher Education Strategy Associates production, produced by Tiffany McLennan and Samantha Pufek, hosted by Alex Usher, music by T. Bless and the Professionals. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.